decided we needed to have a little more oatmeal, and so Jack gets up early every other morning and makes oatmeal for us in the wintertime. And I like oatmeal very much, but I don't always really want it at breakfast, and I do like wild rice and bulgur and other things, so I thought, why not make oatmeal for dinner instead of for breakfast? And so took some chicken broth and, well, first sautéed some onions and separately sautéed some shiitake mushrooms and used chicken broth to cook the oatmeal, the steel-cut Irish oatmeal, and made it as a, in the same way I do bulgur, and put a little toasted almonds, chopped up toasted almonds on at the end, and I think it's a great accompaniment to things like bird. I don't know if I'd want it with a roast beef, but with chicken and quail or other things like that, it's nice.
How did you meet Julia Child anyway? I don't even know that story.
Oh, well, that was really fun. Years ago when it must have been 30 years ago now, or 35, when our daughter was really little, we were shopping in one of the major well-known stores in Boston, and Julia was across the room, and our daughter was about 8 or 9, and she said, "There's Julia Child, but we aren't going to bother her, are we?" And I said, "Good girl, no, we won't say anything." But Julia came up to the same counter looking at some sweaters that we were looking at, and she said a few words, and so we just answered her remark, or answered her question, whatever she said, and moved away to respect her privacy. And she came up to the next place we were and again tried to start a conversation, and we tried to give her space. And finally, it was such that we couldn't ignore her anymore. We had to let on that we knew who she was. And so I said, "I have to thank you for all the pleasure you've given us through the years." Mm-hmm. And then we moved away again. Still didn't want to.
The epitome of politeness, as always.
So she dashed into the elevator just as the door was closing to be with us one more time. And there were no names exchanged, no nothing. We just had this another brief conversation. And that was it. And 20 years later, we got involved with the American Institute of Wine and Food. We were one of the founding families of the Vermont chapter. And through that, she, of course, that was her organization that she and Robert Mondavi had founded. So she was there for some event. And when she walked up to me, now remember, she had never heard my name before. She came up to me and she said, "And how is that well-mannered little girl of yours?"
Oh, no. 20 years?
And I thought, that's why she was so good with the OSS or whatever it was she was involved in World War II.
She had a photographic memory.
She just remembered people and remembered details and focused on things. But you think of how many people did she meet every day she went shopping? Does she have them all filed away in her brain?
I don't remember people I've spent weeks with.
Yeah. I just couldn't get over that. So then we had a lot to do with her. We had a big birthday party for her 80th birthday at our home in Woodstock as a fundraiser for the organization.
Did you ever actually cook with her?
Not any serious cooking. Mm-hmm. A quick little thing, but not anything that really mattered.
Was the quick little thing fun?
Oh, yes. Well, she's just such a delight. But she was getting on in her 80s then at that point, so I guess maybe we met her at 78 or 9 mm-hmm. for the second time, but the 80th birthday was of course the big deal. And then she was back again for another birthday a few years after. And her brother lived in town, so we knew him very well. And his brother's wife was an excellent cook too. The whole family was very, very focused on food. I think Julia's parents must have been something special.
Before Julia Child and the cookbook craze and the gourmet craze of the, I guess the 60s is when the term gourmet came to the fore. Before that, was there just no food? What was it? What was it like?
Well, every time you went to a restaurant, you had peas and carrots. Absolutely.
Right.
There's one restaurant in Barnard, Vermont. It's been sold 2 or 3 times recently, but even the first people who bought it after the longtime owner served the exact same thing they had served 30 years ago. They never changed the menu. The mashed potatoes was in the shape of a pear, and then it was browned slightly and a little something for a stem, but everything was precisely the same. It was boring.
And every dish of peas and carrots tasted like every other
one. Yes, yeah. Well, once in a while, some were really limp, and other times they were okay.
Right, just how many mistakes were made, but nothing positive. Downside, no upside.
That's right. My father really enjoyed good food, and as a child, even though they had gone through the Depression, and I was young, not too long after that, so they didn't have a lot of money, and were saving for education and so forth, but we still went out to dinner to a very nice restaurant every Sunday. I guess he had to entertain clients, and so he was used to.
So what was the nice restaurant like?
Well, we were in the Rhode Island area, and then in the Boston area, so the best of those nice restaurants at the time. And you'd get some Little Necks or something like that as a starter, and you'd have your beef would be properly cooked, but there weren't any really unusual tastes. There weren't any unusual flavors. Never had a truffle until recent years.
Right, sure. Or garlic. Or,
that's right. Yeah, all the things that I just didn't know anything about.
So the downscale food was just really blue plate-ish, and the upscale food was sort of more expensive foodstuffs and less mistakes made.
That's exactly it.
But was there flair?
No.
There's just no flair. How could I have lived?
You wouldn't have.
No, I would have been.
I mean, you would have made it happen.
I can't even imagine that.
Homemade apple pie. Now, I worked at a restaurant called Mother's Lunch.
Mm-hmm.
I left that out. I should have said that. When I was 15, I started working there.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays they wouldn't let this happen. I got there at 7 in the morning and worked till 9 at night, 6 days a week, so that's 84 hours a week. And when I wasn't washing dishes, I was weeding the vegetable garden or cleaning the bathrooms or doing something. So you were there all day working for $33 a week.
Wow.
Can you imagine? I just can hardly believe it. Well, the next summer I got promoted to a waitress, and so I made tips and did a lot better. And I waited on Duncan Hines.
Wow.
I didn't know that at the time until the end. We had everybody sign a guest book, and he said, signed his name, Duncan Hines. I'll be happy to recommend this this restaurant. And so the owners were all excited, and they checked, and sure enough, it really was he. And he.
That was before the day when they put photographs of restaurant critics in the kitchen.
So that was really an exciting time. I didn't know who he was until the owners got so excited. But at Mother's Lunch, we had two little old ladies who cooked, and they made absolutely the world's most wonderful donuts, which who needs to eat a donut? But their homemade donuts were just unbelievably good.
Did you say who needs to eat a donut?
Well, I've never found a donut since then that I wanted to eat.
You had my chocolate donuts from Westport, didn't you?
Well, they're chocolate, so that doesn't count. I'm not a chocolate freak.
Okay.
They were tasty, but they weren't Lil's or Naomi's.
Yeah, Lil and Naomi. Do you still have the recipe since you work there?
No, I don't.
Oh, that's true.
And then they also made just wonderful apple pie. It was called Mother's Lunch, and it was really real old-fashioned American home cooking.
Okay, so I'm putting it all together here. So there was the blue plates at the bottom, and there was like the more expensive stuff. There was no flair all around, but desserts could be good.
A good apple pie was good, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
And regional foods.
Yes,
I mean, barbecue
yes.
is still barbecue, fried yes. chicken is still fried chicken, right? And those kinds of foods are just more folkways than anything.
Yes.
So let's trace the trajectory of flair. If there was no flair then, and there's so much flair now, has it been just like this wild... Do you see it in your span of what you can see as just this huge upward curve?
I thought everything was really on a plateau until Julia. So, and then it was kind of a not just an upward curve, it was a dramatic
parabola.
It just went straight up.
And and Julia was big in the early 70s, and it took the country a while to catch up.
Even the mid 60s.
I remember when I was very young in the early 70s, food wasn't that great. There were like a few places. So it took time for this to happen. Has it just been parabolic since then? And where's it going to go? What's next?
Well, I think one of the problems, and I think many of our friends who eat around in nice places share this thinking, that some chefs keep trying to outdo the other, and they just add more things and more things and more things,
and
they've lost it.
Right.
Instead of a new twist is always nice, a nice flavor combination that you haven't had is always nice, but in a mad scramble to try to find more and more and more, I think they
bigger,
fail.
Louder, more. Yeah.
Now Thomas Keller has come up with new flavors and putting things together in a certain way, and those things are absolutely delicious. I have to say I've not had a recipe of his that I didn't really absolutely love. I bought the cookbook, and then I've tried so many of the other recipes. They are a little more demanding than some, but then there's the reward. If your friends like to hang out in the kitchen when you're cooking, and we'll even chop a shallot for you now and then everybody has a good time, and you end up with something really great.
Hmm.
Whereas if you're in a community of people who aren't at all interested, it's never the same.
So food is getting so much better. Is there a limit to how delicious it can get? Are we going to ceiling out, as it were?
Oh, well, now that's it.
Are there
limits to any sexual expressions? I mean, I don't...
Yeah, well, that's the question. You know, we're on a parabola. Yeah. You know, what's the next step? I worry that the end of the parabola is going to be chains taking over every segment of the dining industry. Because it's happening.
Yeah.
You know, at every level. Even the upscale ones, you know. Jean George, as great a chef as he is turning into Ronald McDonald, essentially, for upscale restaurants.
Right. And when they can't possibly be on site at every place...
No, he's not cooking your food. But he doesn't have to. It's like branded food. It's Jean George's food, even if he doesn't cook it.
Yes.
And I think, is that going to bring it all down, that kind of thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think, without the heart and soul everywhere, it's not going to be what we want.